we're live.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 92 of the Fans of Power podcast, the most rated R kick-ass podcast that just talks about He-Man and everything in between that's uncut, unedited, but we still try to watch the language to a certain extent in case children are happen to be listening with their parents. So
yeah, don't want to be dropping no F-bombs and all that
stuff. Yeah, we like to, you know, like to think of ourselves as listeners know is that we don't censor ourselves, but it's not like we're going to be dropping a lot of rotten, foul language and stuff like that. But we want to emphasize the rated R content because it's for real fans, not just for, you know, people who want to sit there and say that the He-Man movie was no good because Orko and Battle Cat were signed. I question that kind of mentality. So
that will be another podcast.
Yes.
Another day.
That will not be the topic of tonight's podcast, but I'm Tyler T-Rex Baker, and with us, as always, is the master of customization, is the mighty Rotten Amato, Joe Amato.
Thanks. Hey, I like that, master of customization. I'm like a mint on card, M-O-C. Some people even pronounce that, just like how, you know, M-O-T-U, they'll say Motu. I've never said Motu in my life. I've never said mock
mint on card. But when people say pop and Motu, I'm like, that sounds a little too trendy and hipster for me.
Just abbreviate.
Just say Masters of the Universe. Just say He-Man. Say She-Ra.
Right, that's just the quick little abbreviations for when you're typing and you don't want to type all day. It wasn't meant to be spoken, but hey.
Yeah, it's like I was telling Joe, it's like trying to talk in text verbalization, like, LOL, Joe, LOL.
Oh, that's terrible.
A-O.
That would be a horrible thing.
It's not cute, it's not funny, it's not clever either. It's Masters of the Universe, it's She-Ra, Princess of Power, He-Man.
New Adventures, not N-A.
New Adventures. NYP works because that helps differentiate because you don't think you're not being cute and clever with that because that's what it is. It's the Mike Young Productions series. So
yeah. Well, real quick, I was going to say
podcast, and we can just go off in these quick little side rants about
pet
peeves and things like that, and then just get right back to the topics at hand.
A lot of pet peeves. It happens. But first, I want to wish a happy birthday to our listener, L. Tenda Villaneo, and I really hope I said your last name right. I tried. It's his birthday today. He's a, you know, one of our faithful listeners, and so happy birthday, bud. I hope you have a blast today.
Yeah, I hope it's as powerful as the 87 movie, as epic as the size of Snake Mountain, and just as, I mean, a badass as He-Man in general. That's what we, or as badass as this whore tank top I got on. I hope it's as badass as that.
That's a nice tank. All right. And also, I wanted to say in the chat room, we got JSP. We got Koran's Teaching of Christianity. We got Third Triumph. I always screw you. He's going to have to tell me how to pronounce that. But I must just say Third Studios. I always try to say Triumvirate.
I think I'd say Trimaster, like he's something like part of the pregnancy cycle or something.
I was probably going to say, Jesus, Joe, can you just get this right? So I probably screwed up. But thanks for being in the chat room. And also, I want to give a shout out to Aaron Johnson and his new podcast, the Waffle Mafia podcast. It's a great podcast where each week he'll sit there and he'll talk about like a character. He does a character profile. He'll talk about some of the waffles he's done throughout the week, some things that are coming up. But great podcast. And like I said, he's a really good guy.
Plus, he doesn't like to focus on just talking about new crap in the media and stuff like that. He likes to talk about in-depth discussions. So we encourage that.
Oh, he's a good, and like I said, he's a really good guy, real good friend. And so, yeah, just wanted to shout out to him and his new podcast and wish him all the best on it and just hope it just keeps striving and striving.
We always appreciate his support. He's listened to us for quite a while, too. So we always wish him the best with his podcast. So check it out. He's discussed what I think he, I forgot the episode he did this week. Forgive me, Aaron.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
I know
that's it. I knew he had done like a character discussion of it. That's who it was.
Yeah, he did. Evil Lynn, exactly. And so, yeah, he likes doing the profiles and stuff like that. And he, you know, he always makes it fun. So definitely, like I said, want to give him a shout out. And obviously, like I said, everybody that's in the chat room. But we got three different topics today. We'll be discussing a book. We're going to discuss some factions. But we're going to start off with one, and I think it came from JSP. I think he asked, he did ask last week, he says, what do you think led to the decline in not only Masters of the Universe, like say cartoon or toys in the 80s, but in general, 80s toys, 80s cartoons, just the properties? I guess I'll just, like I said, I know we'll have our back and forth because, again, there's not a right answer here. These are just theories. But I mean, just to start off with, I want to say that from my experiences, like when I stopped with He-Man, it coincidentally was as I was getting older and maybe didn't play with toys as much, and maybe that generation wasn't playing with them as much, wasn't watching on TV, and also in came video games. And I'm going to be honest, from me and my age bracket and all my friends who had He-Man, Transformers, G.I. Joe, it was just the biggest coincidence, I guess. Every one of them transitioned from all those toys, quit playing with them, quit watching cartoons in general, went right to Nintendo, Sega, and it's like everything started taking off. Like I said, it's just with me, but it sure like seems like a big coincidence. Now, some of the younger family members I had, they were just at that time, like maybe a couple years later, started getting into Turtles. Of course, they're younger, so they still like the Turtles. They have the Turtles, but then they're also having the luck of playing Ninja Turtles on Nintendo because everything was starting to be real hot and explosive at that time. And it seemed like toys, cartoons, and video games came hand in hand. And unfortunately, He-Man, or Masters of the Universe, Thundercats, as we said last week, they were kind of fading slowly as video games are becoming hot. And just like I said, maybe obviously toys in general, you know, they had a really good run with the years. I'm not saying it's right, but through my experience, that's what I felt like. I feel like video games maybe started destroying, I don't know, the imaginations of children, because instead of using your toys to play with and act out scenes and stuff, or even what you're watching on TV, the video games, you're controlling them. They have a story in front of you. I don't know. I can't wait to hear your experience because, you know, you're younger than I am, and I know that you still enjoyed a lot of the cartoons way past me and toys. You got that, I guess, you know, luxury or pleasure, but what about you, T-Rex?
Well, now that you heard that kind of malarkey answer, I'm going to give you guys the right answer.
So here we go.
I swear, I was went because I knew when we were dressing this, Joe is going to somehow pull out his Mr. Rogers jacket, zip it up, pull out a pipe, and ask everyone to sit around him and relax as he projects his thoughts about how he won his Spider-Man jacket, because he's going to associate the fall of 80s toys with video games, therefore reintroducing the Spider-Man jacket story to listeners who've never heard it before, you know, while coffee on a little trolley, just like in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, kind of, you know, goes by in the background. As he's telling you this incredible story that he's just like, I know you all want to hear this. In fact, I have got the jacket. I will show you the jacket. Like, dear God, this has nothing to do with it.
I can show them sometime, though, if they want to see a Spider-Man jacket that I want to see.
Okay. Joe has always believed that the video games and aliens are the fall of 80s toys, particularly He-Man. So, my thoughts are, you know, what made the 80s so great is that you had so many competing toy lines from 82, 83 towards the, I'd say 88, I almost feel like was like the big boom of action figure craze in the 80s, because as you're transitioning to 89, when you've got G.I. Joe still going, Transformers, I think, was going, but not as strong. And then they become reintroduced in Generation 2. Turtles is coming out. Batman 89 is coming in, so Batman is becoming bigger and badder than ever at that time, too. But the big boom of, I mean, He-Man, the original kind of groups of G.I. Joe, the original Transformers, Thundercats, Bravestar, Supernaturals, Bionic Six, Dino Riders, Silverhawks, all these toys are fighting for your attention. They don't last, a lot of them don't last that long. It's pretty much just He-Man, G.I. Joe, and Transformers throughout the majority of the 80s. And, you know, G.I. Joe did last into the 90s. Transformers did fade away for a bit and then get trying to reintroduce itself. He-Man was given that opportunity too. But I kind of just feel like a lot of toy lines, I blame people who stopped playing with them. I mean, you could also blame that. But
What now? You're right. I mean, they kind of like ran their course, some of the cartoons and toys. But no, you're right. I absolutely agree. You said they just quit playing with them. But really, like I said, this was just my experience. All my friends who were in the same age groups. I mean, I had some friends, they were just hardcore Transformers, G.I. Joe. I was He-Man. Then there's plenty of us that played with all of it. But I'm not kidding. At that certain age, I mean, I was one of them. When I started getting the video games and then I started quitting with the cartoons and toys, it's like it just took over my mind. And again, the younger kids, they were starting to get into Turtles, and I know they play with that. But you know what's funny? Even my nephews, even my other cousins who were into stuff like that, they started eventually going away from Turtles and stuff into games. And look at kids nowadays. A lot of my family, the younger ones, still, they don't even buy toys. It's like you don't even see kids get Gideon and acting out battles. It's like it's all the games right in front of them. Like I said, I think it's a combination, like what you said, and even JSP in the chat room said, I think it's a factor of everything. You know, like you said, it was oversaturation of so many toys, so many.
Well, I don't think it's oversaturation. Obviously, He-Man was. I mean, when people think of the trifecta of the best of the best, it's Transformers, G.I. Joe, and He-Man. Whereas
Turtles, other sprinkled in, like you said, with a little sprinkle of Thundercats and a little bit of.
Well, so I mean, you have a lot, but however, those three still managed to trump.
You know, oh, no doubt.
The rest of them.
Yep, that's how my friends were. Yeah.
Wait. Even though we hit, you know, He-Man hits the big drop in '86, and then finishes off in '87, and then '88 gives Europe the remaining group, and then they're reintroduced a year later. It just I felt like a lot of them just kind of, for a lot of kids, they just ran the course. But it's almost like. I mean, it wasn't an idea that kids were like that. That's where I don't feel video games, in my opinion, feel like video games played a tremendous factor, because even.
I think it was a pretty good part, though. It was part of it. It definitely was.
I'm getting to my point here, because I got my first Nintendo, I think, in second grade, I think. All of my closest friends were still playing with toys along with video games. Like, there was no drop-off of one or the other. Like, I mean, I'm getting into comic books at the time. I'm playing Nintendo and eventually Super Nintendo. But I'm still buying Ninja Turtle figures, New Adventures figures when I can find them, G.I. Joe frequently. So, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. And it was unfortunate for me. I still wanted He-Man toys, and they were, you know, they were not available.
Few and far between, yeah. I think you had a luxury.
Somebody who didn't want them anymore or something like that. So that's why I feel like it was just a natural cause. Like, kids were excited for it, and then they discover other interests. It could be from collecting sport cards. It could be the boom of video games.
Or anything. It moves on. Like I said,
you start looking at, you know, girls and stuff like that too. It's
factors
to play into it. However, it just felt like. It's almost like the Attitude Era of WWF. It was an extremely hot period that was not going to last very long, but it was the most popular thing going. And action figures of the 80s, even before and after, there was never a bigger period of the action figure business than that decade. I mean, the 90s started out pretty strong with Turtles heading into the 90s. Batman was popular again. Marvel superheroes were brought in with the Toy Biz line. G.I. Joe's still going. But it was not as massive of so many competitors and so many companies coming up with this action figure line. And a cartoon to go with it is from 82 to 88. It was just boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, because you're so spreading out. Exactly, because you're like you said, it's just like a big treasure trove, and it's like you're a kid in a candy store. You have all these choices, and while there's the big main three, you still might want a little taste. Like I said, I did take a little taste of Sectars. I took a little taste of Thundercats. You know, you're getting bits and pieces in here and there. And, you know, in 87, you know, when we had the basically, was that the last of the year that we had Masters in the United States?
Yeah.
Okay, and then still... What happened was, even though it ended, you still had the clearance stuff and people that were still into He-Man, because it's like, okay, even in 88, maybe to go into 89, you're still maybe finding stuff in the clearance aisle, maybe just getting the last of scraps. So you're still doing it. It's just, okay, here's the thing with me with He-Man. I, of course, never sold my figures. But I remember, again, my buddies who had the Transformers, they were selling off their Transformers to get video games. They were selling off their G.I. Joe to get video games. Me? I would save every dollar and anything I could scrape up from school or, you know, lunches that I didn't eat. I'd have a bag of chips and save a dollar. That's how I saved up for my video games. But that became my kind of addiction. And so, like, when people are always saying, like, sometimes you'd bring up, like, hey, did you remember this cartoon or this toy line? You know, towards the end of 80s or early 90s, like, Tyler, I really was done with figures and things at that time. But
See, that's why I'm like, you know what? There were still several kids out there who still were into this stuff
yeah, you had a
just because
luxury, though.
no Amato decided to play Nintendo.
Listen, I think you had
Clearly,
a perfect, you
everybody
did.
must have followed the way of Amato, you
No,
know?
you had a perfect luxury. I wish I could have had what you had, because like you said, you were one of the kids that grew up playing Nintendo and watching Ninja Turtles and playing with the Ninja Turtle figures. You had
And
a good
believe me, I still
trifecta.
liked girls in daycare, so I was chasing girls from daycare. So it's not like
Oh, of
the idea of
course.
like, well, you know, I'm not into girls. Like, no, from daycare when I'm still playing with toys, I remember chasing girls in there all in through elementary school. So the idea of girls did not sway me. I had to kind of keep it in secret as I got older. It was not something I ever gave up. So I just could had to keep it from the eyes of the lovely females that, you know, by the way, in my spare time, I'm still renting He-Man tapes and playing with G.I. Joes in fourth grade, you know, so.
No. Yeah, so it's just a big combination. It's a lot of factors, and it's not saying any of, Tyler's all only right or I'm only right. I think you
No,
sprinkle in a
it's a bunch of stuff because it
yeah.
just, but it was strictly a period, obviously, that was not going to last for whatever reason. Because, I mean, you look at all the toy lines from 82 to 88 that was introduced, you know, I mean, tons of them. And all the cartoons in between, it was such a. And then a lot of those cartoons were played in syndication into the early 90s. So they're still holding on to that. But, you know, it's nothing was going to be, it wasn't going to keep stretching, except for the few that managed to make it from, you know, out of the 80s into the 90s and for a few more years. But it just, was just a big fad because it was, you had a lot of kids transitioning. You like kids at Joe's age were older than, obviously older than I was, who got to experience it and they're gradually growing up and phasing out. You've got kids my age who were catching the tail end of it as it was phasing out. So you're kind of getting the leftovers while all the
Yeah.
other, it almost just felt like it was almost economics, you know,
Yeah.
that obviously kids probably just got tired, like Thundercats only had a, you know, I think a total of three waves were of figures, where you might could count one of them as, or one of them as one way, and maybe it counted as two waves, but a lot of them didn't have but maybe a couple waves. Same thing with Silverhawks and Bionic Six and Dino Riders and stuff like that. Man, I'm losing my train of thought here.
That's right.
It's just, you know, it's fun to think about. But I feel like there were so many factors. And me, I honestly, I never stopped loving the stuff. And I knew people who still enjoyed all this. I mean, a lot of this stuff too. But, you know, we were all transitioning. And obviously, a lot of kids in my school at the time were not talking about He-Man and Thundercats and stuff like that. It was strictly everybody's interests had changed. They may have had toys at home, but they certainly weren't talking about it and keeping it popular in the public eye,
You know
you
what?
know, amongst the other kids.
How about we put it like, okay, just on a quick another level to get it kind of just back to He-Man for a second in general. Now, as you know, and people in the chat room are saying also, that obviously we've seen Turtles last and last and still come back and last. Transformers return. It seemed like Transformers almost never went away. And I know that there's always that fascination, that coolness about, vehicles transforming into, warriors and in reverse and back and forth. And here's the thing, though. Again, I'm not saying I'm right, but with kids and their imaginations and fantasy, I wonder if sometimes they relate more to things when it's happening on Earth and things they can see, like turtles. It's all fantasy, but it's still on Earth, and they can relate to things and seeing gadgets and things that, hey, maybe they have. And Transformers, even though they're giant robots, still, it's stuff that's happening on Earth, because you think, oh God, what if this would happen? But Masters of the Universe, you're transported to a whole nother world. It's a different reality. There's things that you can't relate to, because it's not like you're seeing New York City, or even though I'm not saying that, they'll always use a real place, but still, you get landmarks and things that look like it's happening here. So that's what you get when you get Turtles, when you get Transformers. You feel like, hey, I could still kind of connect, because maybe wouldn't that have been cool if that could happen on Earth? But you don't get that feel with He-Man because it's in a fantasy world. And I'm not saying that's why people were losing interest, but, you know, it seems like He-Man always has to fight to try to get those fans to come aboard. I don't know what it takes to get them to stay, like a new generation, because they can't really relate. They can't connect. But you sure can connect with
them. I don't buy that theory for a second, because I feel like they're like Lord of the Rings is a prime example of a massive hit that it was big with everybody, kids and adults.
It was.
You know. So that's why I feel like, no, I blame Mattel and people who are willing to, you know, be ballsy about it and take a shot, whereas Hasbro is obviously, they want Transformers to stay in the public eye, so they keep trying again. They've tried with G.I. Joe poorly for the most part, aside from doing the modernized vintage style figures in kind of a classics form. Other than that, in their collector's line that Hasbro does for the fans that they have to sign up for, but I blame the companies for not really. I mean, obviously the 2000X line was reported to do very well for Mattel, and the cartoon numbers, the ratings were up good. It's all the mismanagement of the toys and the cartoon. The second season,
which they did,
doomed it very quickly.
Oh yeah, so it was everywhere.
I do not believe for a second it's not the idea that kids will not relate to that, because I mean. Robots from another planet called Cybertron. You can't relate whether it's on Earth or not. I mean, you're talking about aliens from another planet. I mean, it's the concept is completely science fiction fantasy. Or say Star Wars. Yeah. Star Wars is another prime example of something that does not take place on Earth, has nothing to do with, no mention of Earth. And yet kids, adults, teenagers all get into it. They get wrapped up into it. So I blame Mattel, and I blame anybody who's willing to just like, you know what? I love this property. Let's go all out. Let's go balls to the wall. Let's make an order of 12 episodes and do something that's going to please the fans who've kept it alive, but market it at a time when we know kids can be, you know, could be watching it at a time, you know, and not flip-flopping around like they've done so many times. I mean, Nickelodeon's done it with Turtles God knows how many times. And
I think I go by sometimes a lot of the experiences that,
there are so many properties that I mentioned already that I'm certain, and you've said it before, because you and I talked about it in private too. A lot of these, especially He-Man, would do very well if it was given a fair shot. It's a gamble. So is Playmates is gambling. You know, here's another thing. When they made the 2007 Turtles movie, that was kind of pretty much a flop, introduced a brand new toy line, didn't take off. So they wait a while and reintroduced it again. You know, they also had the 2000, the Turtles line that came out around the same time MYP He-Man came out. Lasted a while. Went on for a few seasons. It faded out. They reintroduced the new movie. Didn't work. They brought it back again. It's just you got to give it a fair shot, and you have to believe that, you know what, it's worked for you before. Why can't it work again? You know, they haven't really changed the. I mean, other than messing up the mythology and changing a lot of things to make it stupid and silly in Turtles, blame Michael Bay for that one. But they're still introducing the four Turtles in Splinter against Shredder and the Foot Clan. They're still keeping that. And going with that same, they change a lot of things in between, but whether you like it or not, that's another story. But they're still pushing the same thing that got us as kids. They got our attention with that. He-Man can work the same way, but they're not giving it a fair shot. That's what the toy business is. It's a big gamble. They cannot predict that a new reintroduction. How many times has Hasbro reintroduced Transformers? How many Transformers cartoons and versions of the toy line have been introduced in the last, 15 years? You know, several of them. And they, not all of them take off. Do it all over again. Keep it out there. So, He-Man can still work. Secret identity that kids love, or that people like the idea of secret identities. That alone makes He-Man / Prince Adam a relatable character of failing in the eyes of his family and immediate friends, but saving, you know, the entire world from the invasion of the Horde, the Snake Man, Skeletor, and the Evil Warriors. It still could work. Willing to give it a fair shot.
No, it would. It would be nice. I mean, you know, I guess when I was talking about some of the things that I relate to is like my nephew. I remember when at the time when the MYP cartoon was coming out and there was the new Transformers cartoon that was happening and everything, it seemed like was trying to be rebranded. Yeah. I remember I was trying to have him watch Masters of the Universe with me, and he'd watch a little bit of it, and then he was like, oh, okay, and then he'd want to go to his room. And then he would like watching his Transformers that he had recorded, Robots in Disguise. Then as for the figures, I got him some of the new 2000 X figures for He-Man. Played for a second, stopped. He was playing with Transformers. But then what's weird is as quickly as he did this, probably within a good year's time span of sampling all the stuff, he might have been maybe 7, 8 at the time. He got hardcore into video. I mean, he got hardcore into video games. Him and his buddy just played them like nuts. And then once
you want to get back to video games again, aren't
you? I do. Well, like I said, I've given
them. My little brother got into the 2000X.
No, it's good. It's good. But I would give him, like I said, I give him the things that I want him to play, but he wouldn't. But what's even funnier is he wasn't even really connecting with He-Man. He connected more with Transformers. And it just happens. I would love to see Masters of the Universe get another chance, a true chance, with not being marketed to where it's on a channel where one day it's this station, this time, and then, oh, it's on a Saturday, oh, it's on a Tuesday, it's at evening, it's at 4. It's like, when do I watch this cartoon? And then going into the toy aisles, hey, there's 4 He-Mans. There's 1 Orko and 1 Man-at-Arms. Man-at-Arms, Orko gone. 1 He-Man gone, 3 He-Mans left. You know, it's like market the toys right too. Don't do a crazy case pack ratio. And if you do a cartoon, have it one consistent time to where you know kids, you're going to watch it on this day and this time, or people, you're going to watch it this day and this time. And just again, they were saying in the chat room, which I agree with, Netflix would almost be the perfect place for it. I mean, my God, they have Voltron, they have Castlevania. They have so many great original shows on Netflix. I would love to see Masters at least get a chance there. At least it's guaranteed.
I feel like Netflix would, well, first off, you don't have to worry about it bombing in the time slot because there is no time slot. So in Netflix, I don't feel like they would be as, you know, hands-on and getting their fingers in the pie, you know, of like, add this ingredient, make that too, you know, and I think that would, that at the, in this day and age, the only way it would really succeed would be putting it on Netflix, because I don't want to see it on Nickelodeon. Definitely don't want to see it on the Disney Channel or anything like that. Not that it would have the rights to do that, but Netflix would be the way to go on that.
Definitely. And
same thing with any of the other cartoons.
Yeah, I was going to say in the chat room, we got a couple people that definitely, they got some good relatives. JSP, his niece loves She-Ra, and he said still loves her even after 14. That's awesome to hear. Triumvirate. See, I think that's how the third Triumvirate Studios. He said, I've introduced He-Man and She-Ra to like a dozen kids in the last decade. He said, no one didn't love the adventure. So that's good. I mean, it's great. I always like hearing when people love He-Man and She-Ra. I want to hear that. I want to tap more than anything. But it's, again, Mattel and any other company having the confidence to try to bring it back and believe in He-Man like they used to in the 80s when it was one of the hottest properties out there. And they just don't have that confidence no more. And that's unfortunate, because then we're never going to get anything. If that's
how there's a bunch of lazy corporate fat cats who are relying on Hot Wheels and Barbie, the same figures, the same model, recycled over and over and over again, along with the multiple John Cena figures for WWF and the multiple, you know, Batman and Superman goofy variants that nobody's going to pick up and that they're given for their birthday by their aunt who really just picked up something at random at the local Walmart. You know, it's you know, kids are not dumb, you know, so I have no one to point the finger at but the people in charge of the property.
Yeah. And so let's hope one day we could see a good proper return. But yeah. Well, that I hope we had you know, you guys enjoyed at least that.
That was a good little debate there. You and I doing a lot of disagreeing with each other there.
Well, we can agree. If we both agreed, we'd sound like, you know, just I don't know, two tools. Like
in this case, where I'm going to unfriend Joe on Facebook because he disagreed with me and call him a bunch of names. You know,
exactly. I mean, you can't agree on everything because the world is pretty boring.
We can't have a friendly debate about He-Man and not be pulling out knives and breaking beer bottles and holding him up to each other's throats and threatening, by God, I'll unfriend you. I swear I'll do it.
And also, how bland would it be if when I said, Tyler, you know, I think it was the video games that led to the end of the toys. And you're like, yeah, I do too, Joe. And we say the same thing.
That's, I agree.
I'm glad, like I said, you got to have different opinions. Makes it fun, makes it debate. So, well, speaking of your T-shirt, you got a faction. You got a faction of the Horde. So let's talk about some factions. Maybe what makes one more interesting to another person? What's more appealing? Go ahead, why don't you start talking about some of the factions. Why don't you start off with the Horde? You got it right there. You're representing.
I kind of almost look at the Horde as like the bad boys of the He-Man mythology. You know, like, I mean, there's something about the Horde because it feels like it's an exclusive club because all the members are wearing the same, you know, emblem on their outfit, you know, whereas Skeletor's warriors are in a wide variety of, you know, monsters, creatures, humans, sorcerers, and things like that. It's a wide variety.
It almost makes it seem like they could stand out on their own because they're not all with this emblazoned with a, let's say, a skull and crossbones.
Like coalition of all kinds of different creatures and things like
bringing
that.
Bringing them together to work for them.
Even though the Horde is a variety, I mean, you have Leech and Grizzle and Mantana. They're all completely different, but the symbol unifies the entire group. It's not like Skeletor is wearing that crossbones on their outfits. They are, you know, it's almost like they're all hired mercenaries working for Skeletor, whereas the Horde created a lot of these creatures through Horde science.
Like having the Cobra symbol on you for, you know.
Yeah, and like the Dreadnoks. You know, the Dreadnoks all share the same symbol. If you're a member of Cobra, you wear the Cobra emblem proudly. You know, so it's a faction. Like, they are a club. You know, and Skeletor at one point was a member of the Horde. So he was part of, and he's like, you know what, I'm going to start my own club. You know,
it would have been nice to see him represent
the Snake Man, have an emblem that only the Snake Man carries. And
yeah, it's too bad we couldn't see Skeletor representing the Horde emblem in the cartoon when he was first a member, just to have it right there. But he didn't get to represent that Horde back.
He was above the Horde logo anyway. Like, man, to hell with that. I've got my crossbones and my little bat emblem of his own because that original figure. It's got that bat emblem.
It does. People forget about that. Because in the cartoon, I think we're so focused in the cartoon because, remember, isn't it just a nice, smooth...
It's just the crossbone, but the action figure's got the small... And it's on the battle armor outfit, too. That little bat motif.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So it's almost as if, like, Skeletor took Hordak's idea and created his own bat.
He had his own bat.
Even
though his toy has had it before the Horde came, but I see what you mean.
So really, I guess you could say Hordak stole it from Skeletor. Like, Skeletor come up with this idea. You know what would be really great to represent our group? This bat logo. And Hordak's like, what are you, stupid? Dumb old bonehead, which led to Skeletor turning his back on him because then Skeletor's like, I'll use my idea, create my own faction. Hordak's like,
look at your picture that. Like I said, because in the cartoon, obviously, you know, we never seen Skeletor wearing that, and he never even represented his toy bat on his outfit in the cartoon. But as for the toy, he's always had the bat. So, like you said, we can flip it around. Maybe Hordak was hanging with Skeletor. Is like, we have to start a faction called the Evil Horde, and it would have a bat on it. And Skeletor's like, but I got a bat right here. And Hordak, wait, yeah, but it should be red. It'll be red, and that's what led to the
With my face on it. Skeletor's like, you egotistical maniac.
There was this way. That's when exactly. Skeletor's play is like, no, I'm going to have the bat, and I'm going to have my face on it. That's pretty good. So he's
that's what Skeletor doesn't have his face on it. He doesn't want to be a pretentious douchebag with his face plastered on every single thing. You know, whereas
great.
The Horde is like a big conglomerate, you know. They've got their factory. The Hordak's face is plastered on everything. It's like Lord Helmet's, you know, space balls, the toilet paper. So
everything.
You've got the logo plastered on everything.
Everything, his vehicles.
The Horde bathroom. I bet Hordak's got the bat symbol on every bit of toilet paper, so that way Majolar can wipe his ass with Hordak's face, you know.
Everything. Yeah, but
that
you're right.
Probably wasn't Hordak's intention, but...
He's got to have it. You're right. That's going to be somewhere, whether it's on their belt buckle, whether it's on an armband, whether it's right here. Even when Hordak turns into...
Yeah, there's probably like a Horde store, like in the Fright Zone, that, you know, every Horde member has to rotate duty on. And you get your Horde bracelet. You get your Horde belt buckle. You get your Horde chest plate. You got your Horde tattoos. You got, you know...
All while using your Horde MasterCard. You got a Horde MasterCard that you charge
Horde
with.
MasterCard. That way, if you use the card, you can get 10% off your meal in the cafeteria, you know, or something like that. If you don't have your card, you got to pay full price, which everything keeps going back to the Horde. Like, all the money just keeps being recycled back into the Horde because they're collecting taxes that people can't pay.
They got everything.
They are just a big conglomerate monopoly of Etheria. Hordak is the definitive businessman.
Yeah, I mean, now that he has everything, remember, it's like, what do I need to conquer? It's all he has to do is keep getting his taxes, making sure people obey and pay him and try to conquer maybe this town or that town, but he's laying back because he has everything already. What does he need to conquer?
He's got everything, but he's mad that Skeletor has ventured off, sets his sights on another planet with an incredibly powerful castle, and he's doing quite well for himself as to building up his group and his empire, even though he's constantly losing, and Hordak is being defaced and having his image spray painted in black by She-Ra and the Great Rebellion.
Yep. Isn't it something?
So they're both a luxury.
It's almost like a luxury of the Horde and Snake Men is to just identify them with the bat or the snake. It makes you know that is that group. And, you know, compared to like Skeletor and all his evil warriors, like you said, they have no definitive symbol that does that. But when you think about like, you know, how some of them look cooler, because, you know, people really get into the Horde faction. And as of late, it seems like people are really getting into the Snake Men, which at one time people said, oh, they're not good, but I love the Snake Men. But, you know, what's weird is when you look at these factions, like I said, Hordak, and at least in his story, is supposed to be, they've conquered, they have it all. So you look at another faction, we won't go to the Snake Men because we'll hit them in a second, but let's go to Skeletor and his evil warriors. They don't have everything. They, you know, remember, they didn't have Eternia conquered. They're still nonstop trying to get, you know, the power of Grayskull to stop He-Man, to still do things. It's like, you wonder, what's more stressful? Is it, you know, I mean, really, you don't know. Hordak, he has it all, but still just wants to make sure people pay for him and still get bits and things here and there. Or Skeletor, who is nonstop still trying to defeat that He-Man, that blonde-headed, you know, buffoon or whatever, that muscle-bound buffoon He-Man. He's still trying to always defeat him, always get the power of Grayskull, and always doing something. He's always plotting because he doesn't have the control he wants. You wonder how that, you know, plays into the mind of a villain compared to one and another. You know, Hordak, and, you know, we won't tell either the Snake Men, we'll talk about them eventually, how they get their stuff. But, I mean, what do you think? How does that play into, like, you know, who should be the more busier of the villains? You know, you'd think Hordak wouldn't be as wanting because he has everything, but you'd think he probably still wants it all.
Because Hordak's been in charge for so long, now he's constantly facing minor setbacks here and there. Every time he conquers one village, She-Ra has saved two. You know, and the rebellion is constantly getting bigger. Resistance is getting bigger. People are refusing to pay taxes because She-Ra is protecting this village.
So he is a different form of stress. He is a different form of stress.
Yes, he is constantly facing setbacks and decline of financial means consistently. For every destructor tank he puts out, She-Ra destroys four of them. You know, so he's constantly facing financial setbacks all the time and being embarrassed by a very strong, kick-ass, beautiful woman and farmers with pitchforks and stuff like that. Whereas Skeletor can be successful at quite a few times because while he may be focusing on Grayskull a whole lot, there's other times where he's on missions of pure destruction that He-Man is not even aware of. You know, just like in Prince Adam No More, where we mentioned that Skeletor's on a destruction mission in space. Well, He-Man and nobody else is around to stop that. So Skeletor is still successfully destroying things, finding artifacts, but he's constantly focusing on one thing. That he just, it's just like, you know what, if you focus on some other great victories, you could kind of mount up a bigger variety of tools at your disposal. But he's always focusing on Grayskull.
Yeah, it's like he's trying to
amass his... taking time to say, you know what, let me take a break from Grayskull for a while. And he does, in the cartoon he does. He puts Eternia's food supply in jeopardy. He decides to put the Dark Moon and Bright Moon into an absolute war. I mean, there's just a few examples of stuff where Skeletor's not always focusing on Grayskull.
But his major goal, that's his major goal.
His major goal is Grayskull, whereas Hordak's major goal is just pure greed and ruling everything and keep this woman from embarrassing him and his troops that his own science division has created, you know, Horde science. You know, that's where we get Mantanna and Grizzlor and Leech and Catra and sorcery, you know, through Shadow Weaver and stuff like that.
You know, and that's why I like I said, all the different factions, they all have a different goal. I mean, the means is basically the same with the villains. They want to conquer, they want to rule the stuff, but everybody has a different kind of way of looking at it. Like when you look at the Snake Men, see, since we did not, you know, we never got them in the cartoon for Filmation, of course we got them in MYP, but to me, they felt more sinister, meaning I can't picture, even though I know King Hiss is a king, and he would sit at a throne, and maybe people have do his bidding, but I don't get the feel of him like there would be taxes that would have to be done. I feel like his goal is to conquer, to eat, and destroy, kill. They would feel more violent. For me, I would feel like the Snake Men would be the most sadistic, crazy, bloodthirsty group out of all of them, and trying to rule. But I don't see, like you said, no major goals of taxing and that. No, I don't get that vibe from the Snake Men.
I see them very similar to the Skeletor and the Evil Wars, where a lot of they're just out for pure destruction. You know, they may have certain goals from time to time, but, you know, I mean, in essence, the Skeletor is the Lord of Destruction. He is all about destroying and taking because he's just an evil SOB. And that's what he is. King Hiss is the same way. You look at the Powers of Grisco mini comic when He-Man goes back to Eternia during the days of the dinosaurs. The Snake Men with dinosaurs and giant snakes are just destroying and plundering a village.
That's what I mean. They still rule.
These people run in panic, probably eating them alive and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's what you get out of it. Because King, like you said, King Hiss still would have his throne. He'd still have his people do his bidding. But you're right. I think they thrive on mayhem, like you said, in destruction and everything they would do. So that out of all the
evil
factions.
Which is why the team up of King Hiss and Skeletor works so well, even though they will try to kill each other. They have the same goal, but one wants to rule just like the other does. But their ambition and their mindset are very similar.
Yeah, it is. It is very similar. I think Skeletor was almost proud of like what he would accomplish in like, you know, to let everyone know he's the ruler of Eternia. And not saying King Hiss wouldn't, but I think with King Hiss, like you said, there's just a little more, like you said, a bloodthirst with what he would want. And just as long as he's conquered everything and he is the ruler of Eternia, I think, yes, that pleases King Hiss. But I think, yeah, for the ultimate goal and everything, it's just power. It's destruction. It's like you said, eating people, smashing buildings, destroying stuff. He doesn't care.
Statement about making a statement, you know, like we are in charge, you serve us, and that is it. There is no options. It's us or death.
Yeah.
You know, Skeletor is like that, but he likes to brag. He likes to gloat about his victory. He would want to keep He-Man alive and show him what all he's accomplished, whereas King Hiss would just want to kill He-Man immediately.
His
corpse up on display for eternity to see.
That's what you get. That is the difference with the sadisticness of what King Hiss would do. Real quick, I just wanted to say, I mean, we got Eric Amon in the chat room. We got a new person has joined in the chat room, Tom Charlton. I thank you. I've never seen you in the chat room before. It's great to have
you
here.
Welcome to the chat room, bud.
And Adam's here as always too, and thank you for joining us. So yeah, we got some more people popping up in the chat room, and yeah, they're having their little back and forths and stuff, so that's pretty cool. So I hope you're enjoying what we're talking about. But well, now let's go to the heroes. You know, let's talk about the ones that, for whatever reason, that when I go on Facebook and I always talk about, you know, who do you like better? You like the Horde? You like the Snake? It's like, I don't know why the poor heroes get kicked down so much. I mean, is it...
Well, because villainy is very fun to talk about.
And they look...
One of the best things about the toy lines of the 80s, the villains sometimes outshine the heroes.
They did, not only with what they did, but obviously just their looks. Somehow those villains...
From a visual standpoint, the villains are... I mean,
yeah,
over here behind me of my villains, I got my Evil Warriors and the Horde and Snake Men over here. They are striking to look at.
Which leads me to something when you think about this. I almost wonder, is that why they had to make a lot of the heroes? You figured, let's try to make them look very outlandish, because how can just a plain hero look really special? You know, like if you were to look at He-Man and Man-at-Arms and Stratos, and then you compare them to some of the villains always look cooler. So later on in line, of course, you're getting Cyclone, which just looks cool and does crazy stuff. You're getting Snoutspout that has, yes, an elephant nose and shoots out water. Rio Blast has 5 million guns. I mean, I think that it's harder to get people to really like the heroes because the villains look so much cooler. I mean, like I said, look at your shirt. You're wearing the Horde symbol. People just like, I mean, heck, from a customizing standpoint, I've done it myself, and I've seen a lot of the customizers. Heck, sometimes all it takes is putting a freaking Horde symbol on anything, and you're like, oh man, it's a member of the Horde. But you can't do that with a hero, and you couldn't do it with, like I said, Skeletor's people, but you sure can do that with the Horde, and you can do it with the Snake Men. So it's sad. The heroes just kind of, it's hard to really, I don't know, get people into that faction. I love them, But, I mean, what are your thoughts on Hero?
Also obviously feel like they're a given. They're a standard. Like, He-Man fans and She-Ra fans, they love the Heroic Warriors and the Great Rebellion. But everybody has got a favorite evil faction. I mean, I love all three of them, but my number one is always going to be Skeletor and his crew. However, I have a tremendous love and passion for both the Horde and the Snake Man. So, but I always, because of, you know, the Blade, Jitsu, Cobra Khan, Webstore, Clawful, Solrod, so on, Too Bad. Those are just, it's just a small snippet of Webstore, Cobra Khan, but to me, people can say, oh, I don't like that faction. But to me, all three factions are just as strong as the other two. Like, the Snake Men to me are just as powerful as the Horde. I mean, as the Horde and the Evil Warriors, and vice versa. I don't feel that they may not be as in abundance, but that's strictly because the Snake Men were the last faction to come out and got the short end of the stick as to branching and expanding the ranks of the Snake Men, which obviously, you know, we're getting Fangor, you know, add that to the Snake Man. There's other Snake Men they could probably do. I think Quick Flick was another one that Axel designed too, an archer for the Snake Man. But the villains are just so much more fun to debate about, and that gets so many people roused up over which faction is more dominant. You know, you've got fans that are very passionate about the Snake Man, the Horde, the Evil Warriors, because that brings the biggest debate. Who's more evil? Who's more badass? I mean, because the heroes are there. It's like a given. Everybody likes the Heroic Wars. Everybody likes the Great Rebellion. The villains bring more controversy because that's what villains do. They bring controversy.
It's no doubt. I mean, and not only with, like I said, watching them, but also when playing with the figures. I mean, like, I'm just looking at the ones in back here right now, and I'd love to death playing with, like, Snake Face, who's right by your head. I love that gimmick. I love Squeeze just wrapping his arms around. I love taking Webstore, and I would take that grappling hook, and I remember I'd swing it like this and whoosh, throw it onto Castle Grayskull and always catch the top and then pull him up. Just something so appealing about those villains. And I think I've said this story before. I'll say it again, but Clawful. I don't even know why. I don't know if it's because he was one of the kind of villains that really first caught my attention with that crazy, you know, his claw. I was so obsessed on that big claw that I remember if we ever had crab legs, I would take off the big claw end, I'd eat all, you know, get all the stuff out of it, and I'd take that shell and put it on his smaller ones. He had two big claws. So my claw will always stink. I mean, he was really stink.
Nice, but probably stinky fish.
Yeah, we won't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But just, yeah, the villains had such an appeal to at least ones with a lot of the gimmicks. So that's why, I mean, I never really played with Man-at-Arms. I never really played with Stratos. I played with He-Man because, of course, he's the hero. You picture your He-Man when you're playing as a kid. But almost all those early heroes, and I wasn't into them. But shoot, right when they started getting crazy gimmicks, I mean, I was all over them. I love taking Extendar and making him get so giant. I love seeing how he would just get so big and tower over everybody. So, yeah, the heroes, I guess, and, you know, like you said, I guess for cartoon aspect and everything else, they're still cool. They're the ones that obviously, you know, win, save the day, and they're supposed to be the ones that, you know, well, they're the good guys, but you still do get a kick out of the villains. The villains have just something about them. I guess it's cool. It's good to be bad, I guess.
It is. And people love to wear villain apparel. You know, I mean, Darth Vader is extremely popular. Cobra Commander and Destro, the bad boys of the G.I. Joe mythology. I mean, people love Dreadnoughts. They love Storm Shadow. And I mean, Transformers, Decepticons, you know, Megatron, Soundwave, Starscream. The villains are extremely popular with fans. And with He-Man fans, it's no different. You've got three major factions of villains. Plus, you've got the Evil Mutants, which everybody seems to ignore. But Flog and the Evil Mutants are another band of badasses from outer space to join Skeletors in their own little faction there, too. That's another awesome faction I'd love to see represented a lot more. Because Hoove, Karate, Optic, Quake, Flog, Slushhead, Lizor, Krita, awesome band of villains. Very, very cool and extremely underrated because people just love to just piss and moan at the idea of new adventures because they're either not actually looking at the characters themselves. I don't care. I mean, say what you want about the cartoon, but the visual standpoint of the villains is just as good and meets the same amount of quality as the other three factions of villains.
And all I'm saying is in 2018, if we get another New Adventures villain, you better pack Grr with him, because dang it, if Mumra can have Mom Mutt, Skeletor needs to have his dog. He needs to have that crazy looking Grr. Well,
I think we didn't get Mom Mutt with our Mumra because we got shortchanged.
Yeah, I guess if you're good enough.
But yes, the Super 7, if you hear this, you know, give us, we need Hoove. We need Lizor, you know. We need more evil mutants to fill out the rest of that faction. So, you know, regardless of people who piss them, I don't like New Adventures. I ain't subbing up because I don't want a New Adventure. Well, you know what? Certain figures I didn't want either. I had to buy the sub and bite the bullet like everyone else. So
there you go. One way or another.
The meteors, damn it.
We know that story. We're going to have a whole podcast. But, well,
the factions, there isn't a bad one. No matter what people say, to me, they are all great. The Great Rebellion has got beautiful kick-ass women. The Heroic Warriors, I mean, they've got Cyclone, Lizard Man. They've got Black Dynamite and Clan Champ. They've got, you know, the Stone War, the Rock Warriors, Rock People, whatever you want to call them, the Stone Warriors.
One way or another, Man, you know, you're going to like I said, you'll like somebody from every faction, and there's always going to be your favorite faction, but no, there's never just one faction that's completely garbage. They all have their shining characters, and yes, there's always going to be some that maybe aren't really out there and stand out too much, but yeah, that's what makes a great story, a toy line, everything is just the great mix of all the characters from every faction. So, well, let's transition into our last topic. This is a pretty good book, if nobody's read it, and that is Meteor Monsters.
Yeah.
And this one right here, it's like, hey, you think the meteor... No, of course, the meteorbs ain't in this book. But this one, I liked it. I mean, from the start to the end, because there's this, you know, a meteor that splits and crashes, and it goes into different parts of Eternia for, you know, parts of this meteor, you know, split. But it has side effects. Like, it turned Man-at-Arms, you know, giant, you know, to where he started turning on Teela. So I guess it starts screwing with, obviously, your mind. Not only does it make you big, but it makes you, I guess, I don't know.
It makes you more violent than you already were and enhances your size and strength.
Exactly, where you see He-Man has to come to save, you know, Teela from, you know, getting destroyed by her father. And along the way, you know, the meteor that corrupted Man-at-Arms gets destroyed, turns him back to normal. So, of course, Skeletor is seeing this going on, and that pool he loves looking at, you know how it is, wherever it's at, whether it's a cartoon or somewhere, he's got something he's looking into. You know, he's always seeing what's going on, and that's when he sends out Cobra Khan and Beast Man to go find those other pieces. And I think they were even wondering as to why. They're like, he's like, well, think of it. You guys can control animals, you know, like Beast Man can control his animals, and then Cobra Khan can control, like, you know, reptiles, snakes, and things. So if they could have giant versions of these creatures, no doubt they'd be able to help Skeletor, you know, like, you know, conquer again. Eternity, that's what it's about. One scene I liked, I don't know if you noticed in one of the pages, again, you wonder, is it a thing from the artist where he just missed it? Or is it references he has sitting there? But when He-Man's getting ready to get into the Wind Raider for the first time, it's a really big shot of the Wind Raider. It's not even, there's no wings. I was like, what, did the artist, did he have like a incomplete, you know, Wind Raider, didn't know what he was drawing and didn't do that? Because later you see the wings in smaller panels, but did you see the wingless Wind Raider? Did you?
I didn't catch that. I'll have to go back and look at that. But,
I was like, that was one, let me see, because that is one big error. I mean, it's not like just a small thing that wasn't noticeable. I was like, you know, that's pretty freaking noticeable. I think it was like right on one of the early pages, which I'll pop, hold on 1 second. Yeah, right, I'll try to get it to where hopefully, can you see anything there or no?
Yeah, I see. Yeah, there are no wings drawn on there.
Yeah, there's no wings. I was like, that's one big misstep.
Maybe the wings are further back in perspective, or they're just drawn out of the picture.
Exactly, but this one, I mean, it's like I said, they're, it's not to where you look at it and it's an eyesore, you know, to where you're like, God, I don't like the art. I thought the art was great.
Oh, no, his name's Luis Eduardo something?
I think so. Let me check right at the front.
Luis Eduardo something. He did the artwork of Secret of the Dragon's Egg.
Luis Eduardo Barreto. He's done a fantastic job.
He does beautiful work in the He-Man Golden books. He did Secret of the Dragon's Egg. So
yeah, his art is great. But yeah, so the basic story is, you know, Skeletor is trying to use these crazy, you know, meteors, the fragments of it to, again, conquer Eternia. He-Man's got to stop it, but you get to see like a giant creature that Beastman had that was a purple one. Cobra Khan gets one that's a gigantic snake. And then the final fragment, see, that's what cracked me up is Skeletor's having them go search and find these things, but Skeletor never really personally wanted to get involved, but he used his magic to where he transported Cobra Khan and Beast Man to the last fragment to try to beat He-Man and the rest of them to, you know, the last one. And what I liked about it was when Beast Man's creature and when when Cobra Khan's snake, when they both reached that meteor at the same time, they merged into one. And yes, you know I'm going to say it. Man, that would make a cool action figure. I mean, it is. It's this cool mix of a snake and some furry beast. And it's pretty demented looking. I'm surprised nobody.
Yeah, it looks cool.
It is. I'll make a campaign about this to say, hey, if you want figures made in classics eventually form from Super 7, this unknown creature needs to be made. It's twisted. I mean, that's just a quick little sample of, if you can see it. I don't know if I'm in good view.
You're showing everything but the creature.
Oh, wait. Well, let me move. Wait, am I going the right way?
Move it over to your left. Your other left.
Oh, okay.
More. You're still, you're oh. Not all we see is you.
What do you see now?
Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay.
You're not moving.
I'm not. This is terrible when you can't. Wait.
There
wait.
You are, right there.
Okay, well, here's the one. Oh, yeah, that's him right there. But I was trying to show.
Yes, that's
it. Here's the other view of him. Like, you can see him from behind. He's, like, sideways on it. It's kind of like.
You keep botching this so much.
I know. I'm trying to see. Where's my finger? There's my finger. Okay, right here. All right, can you see it now? That has to be showing up now. I think there's.
Yeah, great shot of his butt. Yeah, excellent.
Well, shut up. Well, anyway.
That's what you're putting the camera up to. You're like, look at his butt. Look at his great butt.
No, that's.
Yeah, he must work
I
out.
I should have went
I'm
down.
Dumb and dumber.
Well, what I meant to do was I should have panned it down because that was showing part of him from his back. At least you got to see. Well, never mind. Either way, it's a cool freaking thing. But the thing was, they couldn't. This creature wouldn't do anything. It just stood there. It stood still. Because it was under the control of Cobra Khan and Beast Man separately, but when it went together, it couldn't do anything. So it wasn't listening, I guess, to either one. But I mean, go ahead. What are your thoughts on some of the story? Because this, it was, like I said, it was action from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Great artwork, good story. I mean, it wasn't like, I think, you know, one of the flops, because there's been quite a few flops of everything, you could say, whether from cartoon to mini comics. But
I'd say the majority of the Golden books, though, most of them were pretty good. Though, you had a couple of duds like The Trap, A Friend in Need, Power from the Sky, which had one of the best
Tyler,
covers.
Hold on, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. Eric Amon, he's a nut. He's in the chat room. And you heard what I said earlier about, you know, merging the furry beast and the snake. He just said, I am totally censoring my snake merging with my furry beast jokes here. So, okay, Eric, we got you. I think we know what you're talking about. So, yeah, there you go. He's in the chat room. Good one. Good.
Eric the pivot.
Go ahead.
I used to check this out from my elementary school library, like what I mentioned in the last episode about checking them out in the school library. This was one I used to check out as well, along with the others. I checked it out frequently because I loved the cover art of Cobra Khan commanding a large snake to fight He-Man. Was like, you know, it's a thing of legend. I mean, everybody recognizes that cover. Like, so many He-Man fans know that cover from Golden Books.
I can't remember if that was inspired by a Conan piece. Either way, it's awesome.
A lot of the He-Man stuff was inspired by Conan because, you know, Frank Frazetta painting stuff were so popular with the people who were adults drawing this stuff at that time. And Emiliano did a throwback cover for it during the 2000X comic book.
Yeah.
It was like a variant cover of that would look really cool. But
right. It's iconic.
It's a great simple story. You almost feel like the team up of Cobra Khan and Beastman is kind of odd. But they team cool, up in the fastest draw in the universe mini comic too, so it's not too far-fetched. They seem like such an unlikely duo. Because, you know, you're more used to Beastman teaming up with virtually almost anybody. Whereas Cobra Khan, I instantly think web store.
Yeah, I think it's good because, like you said, they introduced them. I mean, not introduced, but I think it was good to have them team up because you kind of got to see how they both shined at controlling their beast.
Yeah, they both, you know, the only thing that would have made it even bigger was to throw Merman in there. So you got snakes, fish, and Beast all under the control of these three evil warriors there. So yeah. Skeletor's got some pretty highly powered badasses in his ranks with these guys who can control pretty much the entire animal kingdom at their beck and call. I mean, the Skeletor really wanted to create a tremendous plan of attack, use those three, to create massive assaults on, you know, sea, air, land. But anyway, it's a great little, you know, race against time to get the meteor fragments destroyed before Skeletor gets to any of them. Which it's kind of cool to see Skeletor is like, look, this is what I pay you guys for. I'm not leaving my comfy home. I pay you guys to do this stuff, so you're gonna go do it. And if you can't do it, I will get you there. But it's just it's a fun story. Cobra Khan gets a good shining moment, and I think he has a much more fleshed out action scene with He-Man and Man-at-Arms and Teela than Beastman does. Mm-hmm. But Beastman is used so much. You want a good Beastman battle, you don't have to look far.
And did you see that much in any of the vintage mini comics with Cobra Khan controlling, you know, his creature?
No, Cobra Khan didn't get used a whole lot in the mini comics. Yeah, he was shown barely at all in Double Edged Sword, which was the book he came with. He's used sparingly in the Hordak mini comic. He's used in. You never see him control. I don't think in Fastest Draw. I don't think he does anything like that.
That's what I mean. The only time you ever see it is when he's just basically spraying something out. You never got to see him.
He's using the toy gimmick, you know. Even though he's Master of Snakes on the card, it says you don't see him do that in the mini comics. So this is seeing him doing what we expect.
Time to shine. It's his time to shine.
Plus this as well. He uses that to knock out Man at Arms and Teela. So you see it all. I mean, it's almost like they marketed Cobra Khan in this. He's on the cover. He gets more time in the book to control big snakes, yep. Shoot his mist out, to knock people out. He really gets utilized in this because this probably came out around the time that Cobra Khan is being thrown out in the
market. That's what I like. Like I said, you finally got to see him shine in something. Of course, He-Man, you get to see him using his noodle because he made sure to hold his breath. That's why he didn't get knocked out with Teela and Man-at-Arms from that. So that's what I like. I like seeing him finally get to do something. And then also, yeah, like you said, controlling snakes and reptiles, which is an aspect you've never really seen much in any of the other things. I mean, you never got to see him really doing that. So that's what was good. You got to see him do this. You got to see him get down and do some action. But it was pretty good. Like I said, if anybody is wanting just a fun book to read, you definitely got to get Meteor Monsters. This one is, it's well worth it from the beginning to the end. So this is
and the art's stunning. Everybody's drawn so well in that.
Yes.
If you haven't seeked it out, I'm sure most fans are all familiar with Secret of the Dragon's Egg. If you like that, you'll like this one. It's the same art. I love the way he draws He-Man. I love how he draws Skeletor. He makes the heroes look like badasses and the villains look as villainous as they possibly can be.
And it's one of those kind of more, you know, you're used to always seeing Skeletor basically having the skull that's kind of yellowish, you know, light yellow, dark yellow, however. But this one, it's a green-faced Skeletor skull, and it's quite frightening. So, yeah, you know, we don't want to ruin it all, you know, because we always give bits and pieces, remember, when we do these stories, because we still want you guys to go out there, you know, buy it, read it, find it, and enjoy it yourself. But just from the tidbits, yeah, it's cool ways. And I do like this Skeletor. You don't see Skeletor usually like this anywhere else.
No, it's a beautifully drawn book, a fantastic cover by Earl Norm. I mean,
You know what's funny? I gotta remember, this wasn't Gino Diachili and this wasn't Earl Norm either. I can't remember this artist. This one, I don't think, is Earl Norm. I forgot who it is here. Look closely. You can always tell. There's definitely a difference with the... Oh, wait. Seeing a reflection. But if you look at He-Man, you could tell there's something different. And there's no mark. There's no Earl Norm because he always puts his name on all the art.
That was mine, because I've always assumed, you know, for the longest time, and Joe had to correct me on that Earl didn't do all the covers for the Golden books. He did the majority of them. He didn't do all of them,
though. Right, and Gino Diachili is the one that did the early, basically some of the early four ones that people did confuse with Earl Norm, but I feel bad because this is the one artist, I forgot his name. I know they say it online somewhere, but I think he did maybe two covers, maybe. But this, yeah. I'm sorry. I feel like a moron that I don't know, but I know it's not Norm and it's not Gino Diachili. But
well, hey, we're pointing out something that most fans probably weren't even know anyway. Everybody, like myself, would have just assumed it's Earl Norm. You have corrected that and said, no, it is not Earl Norm. So it doesn't really matter because you at least said, look, this is not Earl Norm, and I'm sure people can, you know, find that out for themselves.
Yeah, I'll try to figure it. Yeah, I'll try to find it out, and I can always post the name on my page and somewhere else on Facebook. So, but yeah, so that's that. And Well, I think that was a pretty good episode. I mean, I appreciate every single one of you guys that were in the chat room and with.
Yeah, that's awesome. It has such a good turnout in there.
Yeah, they're having fun discussion. Like I said, usually sometimes, you know, I'll read some of their questions and things they had, but I think they were having a blast just talking. So I was just letting them go. They were listening to our show and talking and having their thoughts on, you know, things we were saying. So I hope you enjoyed the show. So, well, before we wrap it up, what do you have to say?
Another brief update on the mini comic. Carson sent me a completed page of the Heroic Warriors entering Etheria. So it's colored from top to bottom. The dialogue has been put in as well. So I'll be posting that later this week and promoting the podcast. It's, you've already seen it, but this is completely colored. I just saw it this morning for the first time. A completely drawn out page. War bubbles are in, so you see the dialogue and everything. So it's getting closer and closer to being finished. He doesn't have a whole lot more to do, at least finishing pages. So I'll be sharing that later this week. And my recommendation for this week, and I'll continue to do this,
Grabbing that mighty VHS. Here we go.
Yes, is this particular VHS here. Is as you can see, this Evil Inn with Flames and He-Man, Orko, and Teela on here. This is Volume 10, and it features Evil Inn's plot, my favorite episode, plus my recommendation, which is Disappearing Act. And it's a simple episode. Skeletron, Beastman are the villains in it. They kidnap Prince Adam after Prince Adam has lost his power sword in an accident by Orko, so he has no way of transforming into He-Man. So Orko and Cringer have to travel back to pre-Eternia. No dinosaurs, unfortunately. Well, there's one running around to recover the sword and to get it back in time and to rescue Prince Adam while Skeletor and Beastman are waiting for He-Man to show up to rescue Prince Adam. So that's another episode that's heavily, heavily, I mean, just not discussed at all. And as a kid, I thought it was an okay episode, but as an adult, I approve of it, you know, so much more. It's I think Douglas Booth, who wrote Orko's Favorite Uncle, Return of Orko's Uncle, Sleepers Awaken, he wrote this episode as well. And I encourage people, and I will continue to keep posting it, to check out, seek out the VHS tapes. The artwork alone, I highly recommend it. Just from, you see what's on this cover here. Evelyn's plot is heavily focused on this one. You know, it just looks cool with the flames and He-Man. He's got a brown power harness. Used to make me kind of bewildered. Like, why is He-Man's power harness brown in that?
And a nice golden-looking belt, it looks like, compared to, like,
gold belt there. And, I might continue to showcase a lot of these, but I'll be posting them on social media as well because the VHS tapes, they're the classic way of watching these cartoons. So
yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, thanks for that recommendation. And real quick, I was going to say, JSP in the chat room did say that Meteor Monsters, he said it is Gino Diachile. So it's just, the art just seems so, like, I mean, you know, like I said, you knew it wasn't Earl Norm. And I know Gino Diachile's earlier covers he did had a distinct look. It looks slightly different, but I'm sure he can make different styles, but he says Gino Diachile, so thank you, JSP. I did not know that. This one, I just never labeled because I didn't think it looked like his or Earl's, but, I mean, I'm sure you probably found that somewhere where I would have looked, too. I would have probably went to Google or Facebook to try to look, so thank you for letting us know. That's Gino Diachile, so I love it. Those are the two artists that did the covers, basically, the main two. I don't know if there was another one, but I know they were the main two that did all these kind of storybooks.
Thank you for clarifying that for us.
Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate it. See, like I said, you learn something new every single day. So I like that I know that now. But okay. Well, no, it was a great episode. So let me just tell you guys where to go. You can go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
You're a nice guy. You're a funny guy, Sully. I like you. So I'm going to kill you last.
And that was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that was Commando. Or wait, no. Oh, good. I was right. Okay, good. I thought I blew it. Okay, see, Joe got another one. I'm on a hot streak. I got last week, got this week. Joe's finally broken that horrible losing streak.
Don't worry, you'll lose it all come next week.
Probably. So, all right, guys, well, take it easy. Glad you enjoyed it. It was fun having you here.
Take care.